Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 69 of Inside the Game, but episode 1 of Inside the Tanks, because we have big announcements tonight. That's right. Tonight, I mean, we've been holding it in for a while. We finally get to let the cat out of the bag. World of Tanks, it's our new focus here now. Not only for Inside the Game, but really for One More Game in general. Yeah. Like, all of it. It's just, we're just going to, in preparation for this, we actually spent the last weekend in an M1 Abrams. We got to, you know, drive it around, load shells into the firing mechanism. It was really quite amazing. And you know, I felt so much more connection with the game when we did that.
It's an elegant game. And actually, in the spirit of this announcement, it's worth mentioning, too, EG's StarCraft II squad has switched completely over to World of Tanks as well. So this Oz match against Violet's going on right now will be the last StarCraft II match you'll see us play. Really excited about it. We think this game is really the future of gaming. I think the elegance. You know, when I saw the passion between Artosis and Tasteless when they were commentating, I knew that this was going to be something big. When I saw how excited they were to be commentating that game, I knew it.
I felt the passion as well.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Inside the Game. Yes, the Muslim, not with us tonight. He's actually streaming right now, so if you're interested, you could go over and stream. And we're going to have more news in the upcoming weeks, guys. But thanks for tuning in tonight. This is episode 69, which, you know, if you're 12 years old, you're like...
If you're 12 years 69. Old, then it cracks up.
So that was a part of the joke.
Or if you have an almost 12-year-old son, I guess, huh?
Yeah, almost. Yeah, only 7. It's like, yeah,
he's more than halfway there, I guess.
Ooh, it's great.
But is he 7? God dang.
I know, he's going to be 8 in September, man.
You know what, by the way, too, I've been searching. When's his birthday, September? September what?
September 25th.
For him. Mine's the 11th.
Good for him. Well, good for
good
you.
Things happen in September, good I think. I was going to say, keep him on Minecraft, though, because every once in a while I'll just like click around in random names on Twitter and I'll check YouTube and stuff. Apparently, if you do anything with Minecraft, you'll have about 600,000 Twitter followers and a million.
So, check this. I mean, we're already off subject, but Miniwheat watches a ton of Minecraft videos. Like, I mean, and so I kind of hear the whole range of them, from the guys who obviously, you know, that those guys are making YouTube bank, because I hear them all the time, the Yogscast guys. And people are going to be like, you let your kids listen to Yogscast? That's for a whole nother show. But then you get like the guys that are obviously like other 12-year-old kids that are making Minecraft videos, you know, that aren't that great.
Okay.
But you know what? He, through, you know, being around me and all the shows and watching YouTube videos, that kid's got like 144 episodes on his Twitch channel, man. He like fires it. He's like, welcome to my episode. We're going to blow up some cows. Let's do it.
It's probably not the time to discuss it, but I still don't really understand the viewership of Minecraft. Like, don't you just go around building stuff?
You know, a lot of it is people showcasing either what they built or mods that you can play.
And personalities. Like,
and definitely personalities, yeah.
I respect the crap out of Minecraft because it's very reminiscent for me of like Legos, which I think is one of the single greatest things to have ever happened to anyone for our creativity as young people. And then I love the throwback style of the game. It's really cool. But it's just the numbers really boggle me. It's very kind of League of Legends-esque in terms of numbers for me. Like sometimes I'll fire up a random stream for some guy I vaguely heard of in League of Legends, and he has 40,000 people watching him say not a single word and just kind of playing League of Legends like anybody else. And then I'll look at a Minecraft video that's got 20 million views, and the guy's got 400,000 Twitter followers, and it's a 19-year-old guy called The Syndicate, and he just rambles on the entire time he's playing, and I shit you not, most of it's like, I've got a golden sword, golden sword, golden sword, I've got a golden... Oh, what's that? I'll shoot with my arrow. I shot it with my arrow. And it's shot! It's shot with my arrow!
I've probably seen that video. Yeah, just, or heard it, you know.
The whole time I get this like sinking feeling of like, oh my god. This guy is 100 times more famous than I am.
Don't forget that like millions and millions of people played Minecraft. Yeah. Like it is.
I know. I'm just saying. Like, I'm just. It's a weird. Like, imagine an Outer Limits episode where in an alternate universe, clowns are like politicians and they're the actual super celebrities, and like Bongo the Clown walks in. Quick, quick, like, hello, boys and girls, like, Bongo the Clown, says 10 million people. It's just a weird experience, man.
It could happen. And of course, the perfect segue for all of this is that StarCraft II had the number two spot in the most viewer hours on Twitch. So, good job, StarCraft, while you're falling into the grave. At least you're still up there in the number two spot.
Reached up for that last little glimpse of light.
Let's do it one more time. But actually, seriously.
Streaming for StarCraft II has been pretty freaking awesome, to be honest with you. A few guys breaching that 10,000 mark, which is kind of really cool. Most recently, DaMuslim actually getting up there pretty consistently. Tournament viewership was great. DreamHack hitting 120,000 is pretty actually unparalleled. And I think a lot of that can be attributed to, I feel like, the new tournament system where there's just less. We're not at that point yet where in the month of April we'll have DreamHack, MLG, two arenas, a WCS offline. You know, like, it's not going to get crazy like that. So I think when you have a couple weeks between every tournament, people get more excited about said tournament. It just seems better for everybody. But also I think Heart of the Swarm is a better game than Wings of Liberty, and I think everybody would agree with that.
Yeah, it is pretty much the ideal situation. Like everything we talked about before the HOTS release, like no one expected to go back up to almost 200,000 viewers and, you know, just easily getting 15,000 viewership on stream. But it's been a massive shot in the arm. Like, given that we now have all the MOBAs for competition plus all the other gaming stuff, I think this is about as good as it could have been.
It makes me more excited for you know, May. And not because I expect there to be growth, but more because I'm interested to know what the growth is. Because I don't know. I actually believe that in some cases, game releases are a lot like the movie releases. In that you rarely have a weekend where you open at this number and then you beat it the following weekend. It just rarely ever happens. And we have, in gaming and in esports, seen that growth. We've seen that, you know, sort of break that mold. But now that we're in, you know, Heart of the Storm, I think that the graph I was just showing, which shows all the way back to April 2012, you can see that basically Heart of the Swarm has reached maybe about 5-10% above where it was at a year ago. And while that's not 50%, it still is, you know, it still is 10%. And
yeah,
it's pretty equal, but
I think there is a possibility it'll keep growing because there was that initial excitement that's going to be hard to overcome, but it has tested well. Like, the tournaments have been exciting. People have really enjoyed watching them. Viewership has continued to grow throughout them. And we have WCS kicking into gear, which I'm not sure how much of a shot in the arm it'll be by itself, but I think if ever there's going to be a situation where things are going to keep growing even without that initial excitement about the release, I think we might be kind of set up for it just because, like, people are really enjoying watching the game. They're kind of getting back into it, and that could bring back the more hardcore fans who are like, Wings of Liberty is getting kind of boring and stale. I'm out, unless HOTS really fixes things, and it has. So maybe we're going to get a lot more of them coming in over time.
Well, you know what? I'm gonna put on my fucking Grim Reaper hat for a second.
God.
You ready for this?
Put it on, Death.
I'm going to theorize something that's kind of dark and gloomy, but it has that, you know, reach for the light at the end of it.
Okay.
I propose to you, first of all, we're going to go off an assumption, and that assumption could be right or wrong. We'll see. I think NASL will join IPL as leagues that used to, well, exist, but also have StarCraft II. But my analysis will be more important and more specific, and that's that they produced daily content pretty rampantly. I think with the two of them stepping down, and again, the assumption is that NASL does this, I think with less daily content, there's actually more room for that excitement that you guys are talking about as well, because the saturation is a little bit less.
You know, I actually I feel like I agree with you. Like, I feel like I want to say I agree with you. And it's a hard thing to agree with because it's like, yeah, great, less content. But to back up your statement, IPL is also not broadcasting 24 hours anymore. Yeah. And really, what people watch are the individual streamers and WCS. And at least... that's pretty from a StarCraft perspective. I mean, obviously, when major tournaments are going on, but at least there's continuity in that.
Yeah. And I mean, it's not. I'm not hating, by the way, on daily content because I do think daily content's great. But I do also think that there's something to be said for a situation where, that premium league-produced content, being a little bit more rare, will have potential positive effects as well.
Especially when it's the ones who really do it well who have survived the MLGs and the DreamHacks and whatnot. Like, you're not going to have, like, a mediocre show kind of dumbing everything down. Just when it happens, it's going to be amazing.
All right. So, this might be a weird segue, you guys, but I feel like it's a somewhat appropriate. No, I'm actually serious about this one.
Yeah,
so
I like weird segues.
I want to make a comment, segue based off of a comment that the Good Studio said regarding the ShoutCraft America competition, is that they didn't tune in to watch American StarCraft, but rather they tuned in to watch Husky and Total Biscuit. And so then, of course, the other thing that they had thrown out is that, you know, the whole tournament has built itself on a hype that's sort of like, yeah, WCS, like, take this one, you know, it's the actual North American competition. So I'm wondering, based off of the fact that we've been talking about these numbers, if A, you agree, and if B, if it matters, as long as people are watching StarCraft, what do you think?
I agree, and it does matter, because if they are watching for the StarCraft, they're watching because it's the novelty of this is North America only, not because they really want to see the skill, especially at this stage in the qualifiers or in the games. It's because, like, you have a few players in NA who can compete with anyone, like the Scarlets and whatnot, but you're not going to watch the random group stages of North Americans for the skill. If anything, you're watching that because it's cool that it's a North American-only thing or because you're a Total Biscuit and Husky fan. And it matters because I'm not really sure how long that can last. Like, Total Biscuit and Husky are pretty fucking big. They have a really big following. That might be enough to actually just sustain the tournament by itself. But if it's not, I don't know how quickly the players... Because the whole premise behind this is give the players something to compete for that they don't have to fight the Koreans for prize money. And that then encourages them to practice more and to become higher level players and, like, catch up with the Koreans. But is that going to happen within two or three seasons before Total Biscuit gets tired of funding it out of pocket? I don't know if that's going to happen. So if people aren't actually excited about the players, then I'm not sure if they're actually going to be able to sustain another couple of seasons.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate. What if 30% of the people that came to watch Husky and TB are like, StarCraft thing's pretty fucking good. I'm gonna check out something else. And as a result, it actually ends up bringing.
Well, are we talking about bringing in non-StarCraft fans or bringing in non-North American fans?
I mean, at that point, again, like, I guess I posed the question, like, does it matter? It's 30,000 people watching a competition is still 30,000 people watching competition. If there's a chance that...
40,000, actually.
40,000, excuse me. If there's a chance that a percentage of these people would like, gain interest because this was their point of entry, you know, I at least...
I think if that's our goal, then Total Biscuit is a great way to do that, but not with the North American tournament. I say put him, like, have him host another, like, more generic ShoutCraft with bigger players and more excitement behind it, and then that would be the way to do it. I think this is very much so a North American scene-focused thing. And it's good they're doing that. I don't know. I hope it can sustain the viewership. I hope the players are good enough and the games are entertaining enough, and I'm not sold on that yet. I don't know if it will be.
My take's a little bit different from the Good Studio on why the league was so far a success, and we'll see where it, you know, like Greg said, if it can sustain that or grow it even, which is their plan. They were hoping for 50,000 the next broadcast, and as they get to the round of eight, so on. My take on that is not necessarily people are like, oh, Total Biscuit and Husky are commentating, and then they show up in droves like that. I do definitely think commentators are a big part of viewership, but I think there's, like, tiers of commentators, and as long as they are relative to that top-ish tier, then you're going to see the same kind of turnout from audience. Like, I don't think this 40,000 audience is unique to the fact that it was either Husky or Total Biscuit. I think it was the level of Husky Total Biscuit that drew them there. But to me, that the perhaps equally important and other drawing factor of this tournament is, I agree with Greg, not the level of play necessarily or the names, which is big draws to tournaments, and that's been proven through time. People don't like it, but that's actually true in StarCraft II. Like, there's intriguing storylines and names, and people will go watch whether they win or not because they want to see if they lose or win. But I think it's because of the spirit of the tournament, which is people really do get excited about regionalistic tournaments because they're excited about being able to crown someone the best in that country or whatever. And also, I think Total Biscuit and Jenna have done a very good job of advertising this tournament, like you said, Wheat, as like a almost like a charity-run event for the players that were forgotten by the Koreans invading America type of thing. Like, this is the true WCS North America. I think the intrigue, the uniqueness, and the regionalistic style, or I guess nationalistic style, not necessarily regionalistic, style of the tournament is the draw here. I think if they do another Shoutcraft that's just top players like Greg was saying, I think the viewership's very similar, or dare I say, I was about to say a little bit lower, but I think actually what's happening too is that these kind of tournaments are more popular in Heart of the Swarm because of the different tournament atmosphere that we have right now as well. So I think if he ran an invitational Shoutcraft that had a mix of Europeans and Americans, I think it'd be similar viewership.
Right. I mean, as far as the comments are concerned, I really am, you know, especially as an employee of Twitch too. Like, on it, hey, a tournament gets 40,000. Like, there's a couple guys in chat saying 40,000 isn't that much. 40,000 is more than what a lot of the best basic cable channels get at any given time. Like, the fact that a tournament online about video games can beat basic channel, what people pay you $70 a month for to get access to all these channels, that's pretty fucking great. Like, people don't make those comparisons. So, you know, I still have to side on the side of if it can bring more people in, great. I'm curious to see how the numbers will fluctuate from week to week and as we get near the end and what sort of potential there actually is there, because there is something to be said about those two guys too. They can market and they can reach a lot of people. So, yeah. Anyway, you can check out Shoutcraft.com, and they've got more information there. Let's talk about, you know, we talked a little bit about the numbers of streaming. We talked about one of the things that's been helping with those numbers. That's WCS. How about we shoot on over to some recent news. Suppy Advanced in WCS NA certainly really talked about right now his games. Obviously a lot of people have been chatting about it, and I thought that we should talk a little bit about that. And maybe that group in general. Let me bring them
yeah,
up.
I mean, as far as the group in general is concerned, I think the majority of people are very surprised that it wasn't Ryung and Hart that made it out of there. Hart, not a particularly super powerful Korean, but the matchup that he is really good at is TVZ, and then second would certainly be TVT. He's very strong in both those matchups, and then, of course, Ryung is a TVT sniper, so Hart was less... I think everyone predicted Ryung 1 and then probably Hart 2. But for Suppy to come out and have the series he did against Hart, first and foremost, which was very straight up and an incredible game, too, like one of the best games I think I've ever seen, and certainly one of the most exciting. But, of course, I have a huge bias in there because I'm a gigantic Suppy fan and teammate. That was pretty incredible. And then for him to go against Ryung, who is probably the stronger player, and to bop him with a predominantly Wings of Liberty strategy that's kind of mostly because of the fandom that Suppy received for that series, but it's kind of making a resurgence, if you will, was pretty interesting. Roach Bane, that's something you don't hear a whole lot about because of those Widow Mines, but he made it work.
Yeah, the Roach Bane stuff was kind of like, it was very smart and very metagamey because the Widow Mines are so good against it, and just Terran defensively in general early on is very powerful. The Reapers give you a lot of map control and scouting, so you're much more likely to be prepared for it than you are in Wings of Liberty, and then obviously you have Widow Mines, which is great defensively. So Terrans have been playing more and more greedy. Like a third ZC immediately after the factory is pretty much commonplace now at this point, just because people had backed off doing the Roach Bane all in. So some people were smart enough to recognize that and just kind of punish Young for it. But the first series is the one that really deserves a ton of attention. Just the ability, like the base race, and then that one ultra that's tanked thousands and thousands and thousands of damage for him.
Yeah.
It was just kind of an incredible game.
Let's talk about that one thing in particular, right? Because here we have a function, a mechanic. It's been around for a long time. You know, Transfuse is nothing new. We've seen pros use it. You guys have seen you use it on Broodlords, Ultralisks, all sorts of things. But as Heart of the Swarm has been sort of shaping out, I feel like we have seen a notable increase in queens overall. But Greg, like as a player, talk to me about that particular usage and sort of how it relates to how queens are being used right now. I mean, are we just going to see mass healing?
I don't know about that. I think the biggest reason we're seeing a current increase in it is because the ultras just got better and air tech got worse. So you don't have as much. You're just much more likely to go ultras, and ultras work really well with transfuse because they're easy targets to hit. Like, it's very easy to use, and they're super high health to begin with, so they don't die very quickly. So you actually have time to get the transfuses off. So it's much easier to use it with them than with a lot of other armies. The only big problem is mobility, but the other big thing is that the queens actually provide a bit of anti-air, so you don't really have to invest in anything except the ultras and the infestors, because with transfuse you can keep them alive long enough that they just kind of wear down any air army. It just synergizes pretty well with the fact that the ultra is now a good damage dealer, so as long as you can keep it alive, which is everything, kind of dies. I'm not sure if it's going to stick around because it's always existed. There's always been people who did a lot of it. I remember right. Fitzy being kind of famous. Like, he was a no-name player, but he had this mass queen thing. He would actually just make half ultras, half queens against Terran, and his army would never, ever die. So that's always existed, and is kind of coming into the limelight with the current CVP strategy, the quickling upgrades and then fast ultras and then kind of an ultra queen all-in. Whether it's going to stick around, I wouldn't be surprised if it did. It kind of makes sense. Like, the spell is really good. It works really well with ultras. Just the only big limit is mobility, because obviously queens are pretty slow units. So as long as your opponent denies creep spread, it's hard to be aggressive with it. But there's no reason for it to go out of style otherwise.
I think another thing to talk about that group, too, it was really shocking that Suppy went 4-0, and that was really exciting. And, of course, we at EG are really happy for him. But I think something that was very interesting that developed in that group too is Hello Kitty, who's just kind of a no-name North American player, very well, you know, performs very well in the ladder, but he was known to be very cheesy and then did not disappoint in the first three games he played, in the sense that he's cheesy. So the forums and people are kind of getting on him, it was one of those things where, once again, as a player, it's really hard to be a player because all you're trying to do is win, but stylistically maybe people really don't like you, so as fans, they're getting kind of nasty. But then he kind of put his play together and actually took a series off of Heart. And I watched each of those games, and obviously I'm not about to talk about how it was the highest level PBT I've ever seen in my life, because that would be a lie. But what I would tell you is that it was pretty cool seeing what WCS offers, which is an opportunity for a guy like this who, guess what, he's probably done with WCS and moving forward. I don't know that we'll see too much from Hello Kitty at this level. But he's already made a mark for himself as the guy that took out a Korean and had a really good series in front of 30,000 people. And I think that
right. That's
a tip of the hat to WCS for creating that stage. But it's also kind of a cool thing and an opportunity for us as fans and people that watch this game to appreciate, because maybe Hello Kitty, as a college student in Texas, can't send himself to an MLG, so he doesn't get that opportunity to do it on that other stage. It's mostly bad, and I do agree with Greg's sentiments earlier when we talked about WCS that's played online, but that is a little bit of a pro that we have right now, where an opportunity like this is to be had, and it was taken, and I think that's kind of a cool thing.
Discussing some of the other results, I mean, right now we were kind of talking about it before the show began. You've got the group with Scarlet, Violet, Nas, and State going on right now. Still left to play is Group C, which is yours tomorrow, right, Greg?
Yeah.
And we'll talk about that one in a second. We have also then Group G, which is Huck, Kapok, Sen, and Crank. Really quickly to kind of talk about WCS and A, your Group C, I think you're the one that probably is going to be the Zerg heaviest, yes, as I scroll through here. What are your thoughts going into this group in such a, I think, what, linear sort of metagame as far as ZVZ is concerned right now?
I'm not sure if we can really count on it being Muta versus Muta, because in any situation like this where something is the prevalent strategy, you get people who try and beat the game by hard countering it, so there's always a possibility that will happen. But I haven't focused on ZVZ. I played Polt first, so I haven't focused on ZVZ too much, so I'm not sure how that'll work. Muta is definitely still the best style, but there are things that can take advantage of it. So it's kind of going to come down to who is willing to make the gamble or who manages to get scout information in time to actually make a decision like that. Because, I mean, right now, Scarlet versus Violet's on in MLG or in the WCS, and we actually see Violet doing a Roach all-in. So, like, you're always going to get players who are willing to try and metagame you. So, no, you definitely can't count on something like that going into the match.
I have been watching your stream, and I've seen you go up against a lot of ZVZs. I do realize that it's ladder, but it seems like you're pretty comfortable with that right now. Is that, would that be a safe assumption?
If it's Muta versus Muta, I think, I don't know, that Muta versus Muta is really easy. It's just you be faster than them, you don't make any mistakes, you don't die to banelings early on. So it just comes down to mechanics. The only tricky part of the matchup is just figuring out if they're going to try, like I said, try and counter Muta, try and cheese you early on.
Jeff, I send this over to you. I mean, overall, objectively looking at it, this is a very, very strong group. What's your thoughts on it?
Well, I think the name that leaps out the most, obviously, is Polt. He has a lot of hype surrounding him, performs very well. Where he does, but I think it's kind of an interesting storyline is we're coming off of a DreamHack where he underperformed, so certainly he's going to be looking to kind of take that pedestal back, I would say. But then there's a couple, the rest of the group obviously does not disappoint. Greg, very good ZVZ player, Revival, and Ghost User. And Ghost User, like, his strongest matchup is ZVT, and it's so funny that, or one of his strong, he'd have to tell you, but I think his strongest matchup is ZVT, but it's funny because him and Polt have this weird, like, forced rivalry. Every time there's a tournament that these two guys are in, they hit right off the bat. So, I mean, obviously Greg has Polt first here, so I don't know that Ghost User gets an opportunity to play Polt. Maybe he does, maybe he doesn't. He'd have to beat Revival, and Polt would have to beat Greg, or vice versa. They'd lose, and then they'd play that match. But I'd be very interested to see, because Polt's kind of a catalyst, or not a catalyst, that's the... a nemesis, if you will, to Polt, because I think of the Zergs that could surprisingly beat Polt, Ghost User's that guy that's done that a few times. I sat behind him at one of the most recent MLGs, and he went two, or he lost 1-2 to Polt, but all the games were close. And then since then, in a Ritmix tournament, I think it was, he actually 2-0'd Polt again to up his lifetime record against him as something like 3 or 4 series to 1 or 2 lost. So he's played a lot against him. But Revival, again, kind of an understated Korean. Despite being on EG, he's not like an outspoken character, and he's not a tournament winner yet. So a lot of people look at him and they kind of, he's just like a generic, strong Korean Zerg, but he hasn't quite created that identity for himself. So will that be WCS? And then, of course, the storyline with Greg is Greg, a former tournament winner, and everyone's kind of waiting to see if he can do it again. So WCS offers these storylines, and I really am interested in the competition, but I'm also interested to see what emerges from this, because that's the strength of WCS as a tournament, is that if Greg wins this group, then people, I guarantee you, three or four Reddit threads are like, Greg's back, the Grax released, Grax back, you know, leather jacket sales will shoot through the roof for that weekend, it's going to be insane. But if Greg loses, then there's that storyline. If Ghost User makes it out, then people will be on his back, and I think that these are the kinds of things that WCS offers that I really appreciate. And I think I get critical of leaks because I want to see how they carry those stories, because I think that's their job on behalf of WCS as partners with Blizzard too.
All right, let's keep going with the WCS discussion this time. Let's shoot on over to WCS Korea, where we saw the group of death last week. And we're not necessarily going to go into every single matchup, but we did see the infamous group of death featuring Life, Parting, Innovation, and Flash, and that of course saw Innovation and Parting coming out. But what was undoubtedly a huge explosive matchup, some said it was like watching the final four of a competition, and there is some truth to that. You guys, I found out after I checked my Skype at 4 a.m. ran a little like sort of commentary on top of the commentary, but I know a lot of people were asking in the mailbox, we want to hear your thoughts on the group B, the group of death, Innovation, Parting, Life, and Flash. Who wants to kick it off?
I thought the most interesting part was the Life versus Parting matches, just because of how horribly Parting tried to counter the fast upgrade Ling style in the first two games, and then Life's choice of strategies in the last two. I don't know. It was just really perplexing for both sides because this is arguably the best Zerg and arguably the best Protoss in the world. And it looked like Parting had no idea at all how to deal with the Ling thing, which was not a brand new thing. Like, we saw both Jadong and Leenok do it in DreamHack, so I kind of have to assume that it's something that's around in Korea that he would have seen before. Yeah. And then Life does just a mirror image of it. He goes really low econ, double upgrades, lots of Lings, hopes for an attack or a counterattack to work. And Parting just hands him the opportunities on a platter. He moves out with no upgrades. He tries to do two base all-ins against what's essentially an all-in from the Zerg. It sounds weird to call it an all-in because it ends up at Ultras, and you're not really, you know, like, you're making a bunch of links. You're not going to kill him with that. But you're also not making any econ behind it. So once you do get to the Ultras, if you don't do anything with them, you're in a lot of trouble. So just attacking into the Zerg is like handing them the perfect opportunity to make something happen there. And two base all-ins can't work against it, but it's just, it's the much riskier option. And it looked like Parting had no idea what he was doing there. But then, after those two really successful series with a strategy that looked like his opponent wasn't comfortable playing against, Life just goes and, I don't know, it was like 13-pool speedling or 10-pool or whatever, just that kind of builds. It just, it was a very, very strange choice from him. And Parting defended, particularly the Star Station game, he defended just immaculately because he didn't make a Zealot or anything first. It was the perfect situation for Life, and Parting held on anyway.
The double Evo Ling style is really funny because as Greg's talking about it, like, I can, it suddenly strangely makes sense that, yeah, okay, if the Zerg's on low econ and they're going Ling heavy, if you just kind of Sim City and then focus on defending, you really should get three bases no problem. There's nothing the Zerg can really do about that. It's when your army's out in the map and you're worrying about harassing and stuff like that, that those Ling run-bys start to find little holes in the armor. But as he's saying that, I can hear, like, the Protoss side of my brain that's like, but he's only making Lings and he's on, like, two bases going towards three. You should just kill him, which is what we see from a lot of the Protoss players. Like, I sat behind Jadong and Stefano, and I think I told the story last week, but I watched them do this style against Sase, and Sase would literally lose, like, the first two armies because he was seeing the same stuff that all the rest of us Protoss are, which is like, oh my god, this Zerg is on two bases. I should go kill them. But then he made, like, one or two Colossus, and it was a different story. But those first two attacks got monster-moded because those upgraded Lings just, you're not going to have enough force fields. But I think it's a funny kind of, like, anti-meta thing that's going on right now, because if you look at Protoss players, they're pretty aggressive these days. They throw that Mothership Core out there. They get some Gateway units out there pretty early. Either their Stargate's kind of feeling out what's going on but being very aggressive, or they're doing a lot of timing attacks. And I think this Ling style kind of is born from that meta.
Greg, you said you were a bit perplexed by Life's decision in the final games. They pretty much were his life as well. I mean, the best guess that you can make, is it a situation where it's like, maybe I can surprise him with something? Why? I mean, I'd think, like, why wouldn't you just kind of go with what worked so well in the first matchup?
Because it's Life. This is kind of where his success has come from. He's willing to take those risks, and he has really good control. He always keeps his opponents off guard. And like I said, it was strategically a good decision, at least on Star Station. I don't remember the other game as clearly. But on Star Station, he went the quick speedling build. His opponent went Gateway Expand without a quick Zealot. So the initial Zerglings got in. And then what happens from that situation is those Zerglings keep the Protoss off balance. Then your second wave of speedlings come, and they just can't really do anything about the speedlings because they don't have their ramp. They haven't gotten the cannon up. They have no wall in and everything. And it was just, it was only overturned by Parting defending really, really well. But that's kind of a risk you take with it. And so the only reason I really question it is it just seems like in this situation particularly, it's a really unnecessary risk for him to take when he is just an amazing player to begin with. But he also has a strategy that his opponent seemed really uncomfortable against. The only thing I can imagine is on top of it being Life and that just being his style, that he likes to do things like that, is that he was like, okay, my opponent, he's a really smart player, and he also has a great coaching staff behind him. He's on SK. A bunch of other good Protosses on the team. If he sits back, and they sit back, and they have an hour or two in the interim matches to look at that style and figure out what's going on, maybe he's going to come at me with something that I can't deal with in that style, so I need to switch it up. That's the only thing that makes any sense to me.
I guess instead of necessarily keying in on Innovation versus Flash and Parting versus Flash, unless you want to, maybe just a... What did you think of Flash's play overall? I mean, certainly looked like he got dominated by everyone else in the group.
Yeah, I think that was pretty surprising. In a group like this, it's not like going 1-4 in maps.
Right.
Yeah, and going 0-2 in series. I mean, it sucks because it's Flash, and he came from a game where he was the best ever, but in StarCraft II, he's still extremely good, but probably not quite just the best ever. He's like in the top five. I take this more as a mark that innovation really distinguished himself. As
sure.
I think it's funny that a group like this has this power, but I really do think that I think almost unanimously people would agree he's the best Terran right now, and if not the best Terran, then maybe the best player. Because in that group, he looked like he was on a level above on that day, and he just absolutely destroyed.
I didn't see him versus Parting, but I mean, Parting of CVT has always been kind of beast mode, but him against Innovation, is just like, it was just Innovation being really, really good. Flash played fine. He did good things. There was nothing like particularly negative to point out about his play. It was just Innovation being better. And like Jeff said, I would feel pretty comfortable calling Innovation the best player in the world right now. He doesn't have a tournament win, so a lot of people are going to object to that, and just on principle. But if you look at how everyone's playing, I would say he is the best. So Flash is kind of like he lost to really, really good players, and sometimes that happens.
And then, of course, Life came off the great game versus Parting and went up against Innovation because Innovation beat Flash. What did you think, if you could recall back to that game, if anything?
It was just super generic TBZ, except really, really good. Like, he just outplayed him, and he ran him all over the map. Bogus has this point in the game where he just kind of explodes, and he starts dropping everywhere and pushing everywhere. And it's not random. It's not like he hits a timer or he hits a base count or whatever and he starts doing it. It's when he realizes that the Zerg is starting to tech up and get off their pure mutiling bane and composition. And it's such a simple thing, but he does it so well. And it always catches Zerg off balance because just they're not very well equipped to deal with it at that point. And that on top of his mechanics for the rest of the game. He's just very, very good.
Yeah.
Yeah. The drops made a
he's really
tears.
Fun. He takes that drop play and he puts it on some other stage, and it's just really fun to watch because there's so many times where I watch Innovation where it's kind of like Greg just said, like he explodes. It's like pretty generic back and forth, middle of the map Terran, very strong mechanics, it's all good, but then all of a sudden drops in two different locations, army doing this, and every one of them is being managed extremely well.
Extremely.
And his army doesn't really hiccup, or his income, excuse me, does not inflate or anything like that. He just spends his money and gets out there and is aggressive in four different places at once all game long. It's insane.
Yeah, the drop play was pretty was definitely something worth spotlighting. Let's real quickly go over Europe, and I've been catching maybe more Europe, you know, simply because WCS is on during the shows during the week, and I can always have Europe on during the day. So that's been kind of nice. I don't know if you guys have been able to catch any of the Euro WCS, but there's just two groups remaining. And let me bring those
I've been watching
up
all of it.
There have also been some really fantastic games to come out of these groups. And there's just such a, I think, just a wild pool of players overall. Last week we did talk about TLO and Naniwa's group. There are still Stefano Grubby, Baby Knight, Crass, which is bound to be a great group. And then MMA Mana, sort of, and Feast, which is also, I'm sure, going to be great. But today we had Vortex, Nurcio, Deishi, and Monchi. You guys caught any you said you had in control?
What's that?
You caught some WCS EU?
Yeah. Yeah, results-wise, I don't know. I think TLO kind of blown up on his group was surprising. But other than that, it's been pretty... I feel like straightforward. I'm going to have to pull up the results because my memory's not quite so perfect.
I mean, straightforward, sure, in terms of like names that you're not surprised. But there's definitely, I think, some people that you might expect, as is true with every WCS. There's going to be some players that are going to be knocked down to the
Rhett bottoming out is surprising.
Yeah.
MVP survived. I watched those games, and I do mean survive. He went 4-3 in games. I mean, every series was kind of a rocky road for him. It's nice to see Lucifron at the top of his group because, again, a lot of people think Lucifron might be one of the best Heart of the Swarm players right now, but then he goes into a tournament and does okay. It's not like he completely falls on himself, but he's still not winning those tournaments that people think he could. The big, big tournaments, Sase, 4GG, of course, earlier on, Bunny making a name for himself on a big stage. So I'd say Europe's been the one that's kind of gone the way we thought. I mean, these last two groups are interesting because I really do think MMA should make it out of there. I think if he had a harder group, that might be questionable, but I say harder, but all four of those guys are fantastic. What I just mean is, like, a little bit more dangerous for him, I guess. Second place there is going to be interesting because Mana, Sword of, and Feast could pretty alternately take that second spot as far as I'm concerned. And then Stefano's group is interesting because he yet again has Grubby. They've been kind of going back and forth. Stefano recently losing in consolation matches at DreamHack to Grubby. And then Baby Knight Crass. Crass, a guy who stands to make a name for himself because he's coming seemingly out of nowhere. Rising German player. So I like that story for WCS, but none of those groups leap out at me as like, oh my god, they're
right,
so exciting.
Right, no group of deaths. Yeah. Consistency has been good, and the games have still... there's always at least a couple of games of the day that'll be worth checking out.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I guess with all this, we should probably bring up maybe one of the most important things is that, you know, even here on Inside the Game, we have bitched about the fact that there is not a WCS landing page. It's like, when the hell shit's
right.
on? What is going on? Well, ladies and gentlemen, there is one. It's not Liquipedia. It's actually sc2wcs.com. And you know what? On first glance, you'd think, Blizzard, you've done a good job. This is a good start. And then you scroll down, and you find out this website is not associated with Blizzard Entertainment.
Oh, geez.
So, you know, they kind of beat them to the punch, but, you know, it's got everything you need. Current standings, an event schedule, every time something is online, it has a watch now. So, dude, whoever you are down here, Tom McCarthy, your passion projects, man, my hat's off to you, dude, because this is – let's just use this moment to thank the community for all the great things that do come out of the community when it, you know, when it's just some guys put some effort into it, and this is one of those great examples. So it's a nice go-to thing.
Yeah.
I'm sure the Blizzard one's right around the corner, guys. I'm sure, but until then.
I'm very comfortably every week we have this show that they don't have a website, bringing it up and just poking a little bit of fun at them, because I got to be honest with you, like, we've talked about the hurried nature of WCS and how it kind of pains us as StarCraft II fans. Like, this was finally going to be our LCS, where LCS had their issues as well, but Blizzard's supposed to be the guys that do it right, you know what I mean? So it's frustrating when perhaps the most essential thing for launching a league, other than, I guess, having the league itself, would be having a centralized hub of information on the league, especially if you're going to try to be as global and unifying as WCS is. And yet they just simply don't have it. And I know websites aren't made in days or weeks, but I feel like that should have been taken care of 6 months ago and then finished as they launched the league, because that should have been like one of the top things on their to-do list, I think. You know what I mean?
That thing detects your fucking time zone for you. God, it doesn't get any better than that. Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, everything comes down to the fact that they were rushed, whatever the reason for that being, like, if they wanted to line it up with the GSL season, which I think is most likely, but they were clearly rushed. Like, they would have loved to just take on the IPL team, have them set up the website and all the surrounding content, and basically everything's missing or that seems to be being put together on the fly. I'm sure they would have loved to have another 2 months to get that all integrated and set up and then announce with the full product, but it's just, they were rushed and we're seeing the results of it. But as Jeff said, we should keep bringing it up and keep harping on it, because it's kind of unacceptable that something this big and this important isn't fleshed out yet.
I mean, for me, it just means more views on, you know, Liquipedia and other sites.
Yeah.
And
it does inspire the community to do all this stuff, which is awesome.
Yeah, yeah. But it is still something that's needed.
Speed is always awesome, though. I want Blizzard to get up there and be always awesome, too. Sometimes they're not always awesome.
Somebody in chat says websites can be made in days, ladies and gentlemen. There you go.
Did they? Oh, guys.
They could make a website.
If you think Blizzard's going to release this, like...
It's going to be, you know what? They're going to go old school, you guys. They're just going to... It's going to be a page, and it's going to be like... A Hydralisk gif of like it's dancing back and forth, and then there's gonna be like an under construction guy digging, be or like it'll PDF. Say soon and flashing with fucking TM.
Oh, it'll be awesome.
You will not believe the graphics we have ready to go.
Okay, all right. Let's see. We did this. We did that. This is kind of interesting. I don't know that I put this on the original document because it came out later. So this Twitter's been around for a little bit, but they released some art today. And it is for something called, the Twitter is Esports Arena. And the website is esportsarena.com. These guys are based out of Orange County, California, and their Twitter says, Esports Arena is North America's first dedicated esports facility, coming in 2013 to Orange County, California. They released this image today that shows, you know, a little viewing area, obviously. I mean, basically the layout for sort of a glorified LAN center, but it is a, you know, it is a sort of esports focused. First off, I guess, what do you think? First thoughts, like the first thing that comes to your head. And second off, like, is this too soon? Like, are we ready for this? Is esports big enough? If there's competitions here, we've been seeing thousands of people watch online events. We've been seeing thousands of people come to regular events. You know, Barcraft has been exploding. Like, what kind of potential do you guys think is in something like this?
I think there's huge potential, especially in California. I got to be honest with you, I attended that UC Davis LAN that had a lot of the Berkeley guys go up there. That's who I traveled with. And then they just had locals. And there was a good 10-plus high masters players. There's 3-4 semi-professional players. There's a good handful of grandmaster players. And this was just I think the first place prize that Suppy won was $150. And it was, I guess the point I'm trying to make is there's a lot of really good players in California, and they're young and they're motivated to travel and they join college groups and they are a part of the scene. So if you build a facility like that, I think they will come if you're in California. If that facility was in like Boise, Idaho, I'd be like, what a shame, because I don't think there would be a sustainable model there. But if there ever was, it's California that could do this. And I'd love it if it worked out.
I don't know. I feel like it's at a weird in between. It looks like I actually don't know what it goes into renting a place like that, how expensive it would be, but I would imagine it would be more than the $150 first place tournament can really afford to do. But then it's also clearly too small to host like an MLG or something. So I'm not really sure who they're aiming to rent it out to, assuming that is their business plan.
Well, I don't
think
they'd rent it out. I think it would be a LAN, and then they would put on like tournaments.
I've noticed a lot of people say it in chat, and I was kind of getting to this, but so Star Ladder, if you've ever heard of this, if you're a Dota fan, you've definitely probably heard of Star Ladder, maybe a CSGO fan. So Star Ladder, I believe it's in the Ukraine, and they have a similar concept, right? They have a place where competitions take place, where they do the broadcast from. They broadcast them to Twitch. The Twitch broadcasts are very large. It's a successful league. I have no idea if financially they're so good that they're well off, but I know that they did well enough that they did a second league. So imagine that, like, if they put something like this together, maybe the audience is the ongoing competitions. Like Jeff said, maybe not quite like Zotac or something like that. It would be a little bit more high profile. I mean, Star Ladder, they give away thousands of dollars. Their prize pools are pretty decent. So, yeah. You know, if you sort of combine the concept of the competition and free play with also a place where you can, you know, broadcast events, I could definitely see that working out. I don't think their target is let's get MLG
no.
to do
it. Oh, so it's just a LAN center that's going to host their own competitions from it?
Yeah, I would imagine.
That's kind of what I feel, yeah, yeah.
I've heard zero, so maybe we're completely off base, but that's usually what this kind of thing is.
Yeah, I'm still not sure I entirely understand. I don't know. I'm just not sure if there's going to be the market for that, like the money in it. But I guess people have been doing LAN parties since as long as LANs have existed, so just offering a more esports-focused platform for that might work out.
I mean, it's pretty sustainable. I mean, what they do is it'll just be like a LAN you attend and play games at. And then, you know, every so period of time, what they'll do is they'll go out and get your monster sponsors, your Kingstons or whatever. You'll get your sponsors. They front the prize. You facilitate the event by having the place and then having the personnel. And that's what they do. It's not like I can't imagine them being like, we're hosting a $30,000 tournament and it's out of our own pocket. That would be insane. I don't see that happening.
Oh, actually, they do show You know what? I could be wrong here. I'm looking at their website. They do show this alternate picture that has the whole place decked out in chairs. I mean, I'm still only seeing like a few hundred chairs, but I suppose like they could do maybe a major event there or something. It's hard to gauge the size as well. I think, let me just ask this, you know, like, obviously, we'll find out as they figure it out, but we've been through the era of arcades, we've been through the era of, you know, PC cafes here in the U.S. Both have kind of taken a back seat or not really focused so much on gaming anymore, as arcades have kind of turned into ticket machine hell.
Yeah.
But as esports grows, you know, 35 million people watch stuff on Twitch. Good portion of that being traffic from the U.S. We've got, you know, like thousands of people playing multiplayer games and getting involved in competitions and whatnot. Like, is it possible that a laser tag of the 21st century is the fact that, you know, Friday night, me and my buddies can go to the esports arena, sign up for a StarCraft II event. They're broadcasting, you know, games up on stage. It's sort of, there's a part of me that thinks that would be kind of cool. Like, I would check something like that out. You know, someone like one of you guys goes to it, like the bigger draw there. Like, I just wonder if it can be sustained over the course of a year.
I think it could work. I doubt it could be something every Friday night. I think if they did, they'd have to put on like a really cool thing, like maybe drinks are half off, like some other thing to get people in the door. And then they're like, hey, while you're drinking that awesome drink, look over there on that stage. There's a cool, exciting match. And then they're like, oh, I know StarCraft. I played that back when I was a kid. And then they get roped in that way.
I think if everything were more centralized and like they would have a much bigger esports audience in the area, then that might be okay. That would work out. But the U.S. has always had a problem with PC cafes and even arcades and stuff. It's just never been as big as it was in Korea and Japan, respectively, because everyone has computers and consoles at home. There needs to be real motivation for people to actually just go out and be at a PC cafe. And like you said, I don't think they can afford to run tournaments every week. So if you don't do that, then the rest of the time it is just a PC cafe. And if they don't have the encouragement for people to come out to that, I think people just sit at their homes and play games. Like, the socialization is nice, but online gaming is already pretty social. Like, there's already a lot of interaction there. And to get people to go the extra mile to go out and pay for it and leave their houses and all that, I don't know. There's a reason PC cafes haven't caught on in the U.S. So unless they have something special tournament-wise, I don't know. It doesn't really seem like a sustainable business thing to me. But
so what
we don't
Greg's
really
saying
have any details.
Hire strippers.
Strippers and alcohol, and then you have a business model.
There you go. We can call it...
IPL caught on to that God knows how long ago. Like, having a bar in the tournament area, your fans become much, much happier about watching your product then.
Yeah, I like that. I like having a beer there. Okay, let's talk about a couple more things, and then we'll eventually get to the open phones. See what we got. All right, so the balance testing map. Shit, I don't think I've got this up. Did someone snicker?
Greg,
oh, just
snickering.
The balance changes.
Oh.
It's the same stuff we talked about last week, though.
It is the same stuff we talked about, but now we've actually, you know, we did not know what the actual changes were going to be. We just knew that they were going to buff the speed and they were going to buff the spore. So now we've actually seen them, and apparently spores just like three-shot mutas.
Yeah, good. Light them up.
And then, of course, you got the 50-50 change for the burrow. And that the Oracle movement speed and the acceleration up the whole point, that they're pretty fucking fast. Have you guys actually seen any of the changes in effect?
I haven't. No, I haven't. I haven't played it or watched it. But the changes are much bigger magnitude than I expected. Like,
really?
They're all very big changes. Because both the acceleration and the speed of the Oracle. And then the Spore three-shotting mutas, and then 50-50 is really cheap. Like, it's still a decent build time, but that's enough to definitely enable early game shenanigans.
Yeah,
so it's much bigger changes than I expected.
Mm-hmm. What, Jeff? What?
I think the Burrow thing's so funny.
Why?
Because I don't think anyone ever anywhere has been like, you know, I would upgrade Burrow, but it's just so damn expensive at $100.
I don't know. 100 gas is a pretty big investment early game.
Yeah.
Like, the change to hash check was pretty much useless because no one's going to spend 100 gas that early unless they're TLO. All
right, so let's Let's, I mean, let's
and
break it down
like,
in game.
Is that a right? compliment or not?
Bring it. Let's break it down in game, right? So obviously, typical 100 gas is going towards your speed, unless it's like a dire situation. Maybe you throw down a Baneliness first. Where could you see Burrow fitting in early game? And keeping in mind that they said that this change was more focused towards ZVZ. So that question first, and then we'll relate it to the other matchups.
What?
Yeah, the ZVZ is weird because it's so gas-intensive, but I guess if you're moving away from Universe Muta, then it's not as gas-intensive, but I guess they just mean to burrow and block a quick third because you usually take that before Lair, but not by too much. Like you could, I didn't see that comment, but if they actually said that, that makes no sense at all.
I thought that's what they originally said
for Universe Muta.
Because they were like, we loved what it, you know, we loved the whole concept of some of the
They might mean Burrow and Fester versus Muta, or bro, Roach Allians versus Muta, something like that, but I don't know.
Here's the thing. For me, I think Burrow Allians are really, really, really dumb. They're not really exciting. They're gimmicky. I just don't like them. What I would like to see, if this does encourage more Burrow, is I'd like to see it being, like, upgraded as part of an opening for Zergit, and at 50-50, I'll tell you what, it doesn't get cheaper than that. So if you're still, like, drop it to 25-25 and I'll start getting Burrow. I'm going to slap you in the face. But what I'd like to see is, like, Burrow is now how Zerg save their queens against early harass from Mothership and, like, three Zealots, or two Zealots and a Stalker, or two Stalkers and a Zealot. Burrow is how they save drones from, like, a base that's getting four-gated or something like that. Burrow is how they start blocking and scouting bases, so certainly not your natural, but perhaps the third, fourth, fifth, so on. I've always been on the soapbox that Zergs don't use Burrow enough, so if we have to make it cheaper so that they can do it, then so be it. But I think that that opens up a whole new area of creativity that we should start seeing from Zerg players that we haven't seen in the past. Like, Burrow in the past was like, that's how I make my infestors not die too much, and then that was it. And then in early Heart of the Swarm, there was like 3 days where Zergs were like, what if I made roaches and killed the cannon and then burrowed them? And then like Protoss just, you know, made earlier Robos, and Zergs were like, nah, fuck it. That was silly. I'm sorry, guys.
Well,
I'm done with that.
So as it relates to versus Terran and versus Protoss, at 50-50, Greg, do you see yourself still like shooting for an early burrow since it is only 50-50?
ZBT, I see getting Burrow early on just because it has all that utility Jeff said, and because you're not super, super gas-centric. Like, you want to get Mutas out, but you don't need to get them out. It's the Lings and the Banelings that are stopping those mid-game timings, and then you get Mutas to start clearing up the Medivacs and getting a little bit more map presence. So there, I can definitely see it happening because you're not quite as gas-sensitive. There's a lot of things to get, but there's not as much of a clock on them. And then ZVP, yeah, pretty much for the same reason. Things aren't quite as... Although they're against some of the two base immortal all-ins and whatnot, you are a little bit more time sensitive, so I'm not sure if you can afford it. But then you'll also have Protosses who have to delay to get an observer just to be safe, because if they don't have an observer and you have Burrow, then that buys you a lot of time. I definitely think they've made it cheap enough to the point that it's like, why not get it? Just because there is potential for use in so many different ways. It's like at 50 gas, it's not going to slow down much at all, and it could help you a lot.
All right, last but not least, Jeff, I mean, I know you said you haven't played it, but just that faster Oracle, will this suddenly be a Warp Prism type moment where it's like, it has more shields, I'm using it all the time now?
I think there are some Protoss players that are on the fence that they're under the belief that I don't necessarily agree with, that if there's any kind of response to the Oracle at all, it's pointless to make. We've seen the Oracle in the hands of really high-level Protoss players like MC that can make it do things that people didn't think possible. But certainly with better acceleration and better speed, that's only going to increase. I think the acceleration's a bigger one than people know because the Oracle actually moves super weird. It kind of slides, and it's kind of hard to gauge when its attack point should be because it doesn't really perfectly stop. It kind of like slides into second a little bit there. So... with the faster acceleration, you can correct that movement better, and it'll be a lot harder to kill. A lot harder to kill. So, yeah, you're going to see more of them.
All right, the map is available on Battle.net, so anyone can pretty much, you know, log in and play that shit. So go check that out. And the other change, I actually just saw this right before the show began. But I believe it was released, well, right as the show has begun. And I know, I'm not sure if you guys have ever said if you have used or ever looked at any of these. But in terms of any players who are just trying to better themselves and I think better understand maybe even the behind the scenes of StarCraft, SC2 Gears and GG Tracker, I'm sure you guys have obviously both heard about them. So starting with patch 2.8, replay files will contain much more information. We'd like to share some of those details with you. They're going to be doing like the army strength stuff that comes from there. And then I guess it will shoot back to some of the websites as well. There's a one that's kind of cool that shows your spending based off of your league and how efficient you were in that. But I guess that we're going to, you know, start to see some of these things nestled in with the information. And if, frankly, the more information, the better, because I think that that's one thing that sets StarCraft apart from some of the other esports titles that have been successful in the past, is that there is an enormous amount of information that could come out, not only that would interest people at the highest level, but also can really help people improve overall.
Yeah, every once in a while you see like one of these should be a master's thesis kind of posts come out on Team Liquid where some guy just did a ridiculously intensive statistical analysis of some random little fact in the game. And it always ends up being super fascinating, and there's a big thread about it. And people are like, wow, I didn't know that. That's really cool. And so anything that facilitates that, I think, is really, really good, because that's just – people find it really interesting. You might as well cater to it.
Yeah.
I just
think it's cool that they're reaching out to talent in the community that was there – anyways, you know what I mean? Like, both the people behind those two, I don't know if to call them apps or programs or whatever, but it's nice to see them make it, you know what I mean? Like, they made something that got enough recognition where Blizzard's like, hey, can we work with you to incorporate your stuff into their game? And I imagine if I'm a programmer, that's like, I don't know, that's like pretty big stuff.
And so, I mean, yeah, and any time that they actually will work, they're showing one as an example. And if you guys have never been to the site, it actually is really, really cool, the GG Tracker. But it shows you, like, this is the new interactive stuff that, as you can pull it out of the game, you know, I mean, look at how, I don't know if you guys can see it, but actually look at how fucking badass this actually is. You know, for someone who wants to figure out, like, you know, where was I at? Could I have, at 7 minutes, made enough units to stop this? It shows how it relates to what's on the mini map as well. And then the supply of each of the units that are in play. That's really, really kick ass. And again, as a resource to just kind of figure out how to get better, something that, you know, you should definitely take a look at.
Agreed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, not you guys, but, you know, the general audience.
No, I'm saying.
I definitely, in my quest to not suck. Okay, so this came in a couple of questions, and then we'll get to the open phones. This comes in, 2 Colossus, 2 Immortal, 2 base all-in against Zerg is a new meta trend that has become very popular in Korea. Asking you, Greg, and you in control on your thoughts, any thoughts on the best way to combat this all-in? And did make mention that Flying had just used it against Roro last night in their second best of three during the WCS Code S.
It's just another strong two-base all-in. I would guess the specific motivation behind it is that people have been opening up Hydras a lot because you can kind of get to them safely, and it's a good way to counter the new Immortal all-in. Because Immortal all-in with Time Stop, holding that off with Roaches, it requires Protoss to kind of mess up, or for you to catch them far out of the map, or for you to really cut drones and for them to attack anyway. So if you just like pose as if you're going to Immortal all-in, you make 2 of them, you waffle around in the middle of the map, you make it look like you might attack, you might not, while you're going 2 Colossus, if they actually try and get up to Hydras to hold that off, then they have Hydras against Colossus, which isn't so good. But obviously if they scout it and go Corruptor in time, then your army's just going to be quite weak. I don't know. On the NA ladder, at least, there hasn't been too much of it. And in the games I've seen out of GSL and GSTL, I haven't seen it too much. So I'm not sure if I would really call it a trend yet. But I think it's just like a bit of a metagaming kind of thing. A lot of Zergs like opening up with Hydra so they can then transition to Muta, force that Colossus tech. So by going Colossus tech a little bit earlier and catching the Zerg before their air tech switch is ready, it's just kind of punishing them for that trend.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because it's for me, it's not a particularly super good all-in, to be honest with you. There's a lot of builds that are, like, kind of build order wins against it. So in terms of countering it, there's a little bit of coin flippiness, but I think it's the build potentially could be really strong against, like, that all-Ling style just because it is super fast Colossus. And if you truly are going Ling into Ultralis, there's no way in shit you're anywhere near Ultralis by the time that pushes out. So whenever you're going Ling style, you're, like, four force fields away from losing your entire army. That could potentially happen. So if the Protoss is covering their bases and really not allowing a counterattack into the natural, and then their army is super tight all the way up until they hit your, you know, second or third base, and you only have Lings, then that's a really hard all-in to hold off. But I feel like if you're scouting a very strong two-base Protoss that's literally going, like, showing zero interest in a third, you shouldn't be on only Lings. I feel like at that point in time, you're like, well, fuck, and you drop a Spire for Corruptors to cancel out the Colossus, or you drop a Hydra Den or Roach Warren, which are varying levels of okay to bad to good, but the bottom line is you cannot only have Lings and hope to hold off an attack like that. And then outside of that, the only other style that I think would be particularly bad against this is if you're doing like kind of the classic Roach style,
yeah,
and you delay your tech a lot because you're going very heavy Roach off of 3-base, then that once again enters that Wings of Liberty stage where you have to do damage. Because the Protoss is not looking to expand, so you can't really stretch them out. But if they force field off your army and just crush like 20 or 30 Roaches for free, then that's a really hard deficit to come back from in any game. And that timing makes it just much more poignant at that point.
Yeah, but even then, like if the Max Roach player, if he just goes for a counterattack or something like that, because the Protoss on two bases a lot of time feels pressure to attack. The right response to that situation, if your opponent's going Max Roach with like 60 drones, is just sit and keep building up and slowly take a third. But if Protoss is actually just going to go ahead and do that blindly, then even a Max Roach player can go for a counterattack,
yep,
and make the game really weird and uncomfortable for the Protoss. So, yeah, just generally, I don't really consider it, like, there's other builds that I would fear much, much more.
Yep.
The other question that came in was, now the Heart of Storm has been out for a while, and we've had several tournaments come and gone. Can the host tell me what sort of strategies do they feel are giving them the most problems?
For me personally, I think for Zerg down the road, maybe not just yet, but I think it's going to be late game. I still feel that Zerg's air or anti-air is pretty underwhelming. And so if Terran really, really turtles and just kind of accepts playing a super boring game and they get up some Ravens and then they go Battlecruiser, you can engage that army. And so on some maps you can play like counterattacky and starve them out and just deny them economy and whatnot. But if they're able to split half map versus half map, it's a terrible, boring game, but you end up with an army that you can't really engage. It's kind of a similar situation in CVP with like Void Raid Templar, a couple of Tempests, maybe a couple of Carriers, that kind of thing. I just feel like Zerg's anti-air in stagnant games, in like army versus army stalemates, I just feel it's kind of underpowered in general.
To kind of elaborate on that just a little bit, I've been seeing on some streams lately to deal with Air Toss pretty much in Fester Queen. And it seems kind of silly that one of the anti-air solutions that is working the best is locking unit in and using a queen to kill it. What do you feel about that in terms of using that instead of mutas and corruptors, because that's the more cost-efficient way to go?
Well, it just off the cuff, it seems super vulnerable to feedback, given that they're both, you know, energy units.
Right.
And they're also both armored, so Void Rays with... If Infested Terrans were still as strong as they were, if they still scaled with upgrades, then I would say, yeah, that has potential. But I just, in my mind, I see the Void Rays charging and shooting everything down super fast while the Templars go through and feedback everything.
But
so, maybe in practice it works better than I'm imagining, but
sure,
it seems to me like it doesn't... Just given the strength of the units, it doesn't feel like it should be a counter.
So is it basically a required combination of all three to even achieve what Zerg would feel comfortable with anti-air-wise?
You mean like Corruptor plus Queen plus Infestor?
Or some sort of... Because, I mean, I've seen mass Corruptors just melt to, you know, to voids in late game air. And, you know, I guess I'm saying if you feel like you're still having some problems... is it more composition?
In my opinion, the best way to do it is tech switches, like wear them down with Hydra Swarm Host Viper or just anything that has some tenacity that can buy you time and make them uncomfortable. and just pick away at them as you build up a bank and lots of bases. And then you switch to either Mass Muta or, like, if you have a big enough bank, you can do a Broodlord Corruptor Infestor switch. And if you can get up to a max Broodlord Corruptor Infestor before they're ready for it, then you can kill them before they get up to Tempest Void Ray High Templar. And just kind of just taking advantage of your economy and tech switching. Like, you're not actually going to beat them army versus army unless they choose the wrong composition, but you can force them into having the wrong composition. That's the approach that I've been taking thus far.
Jeff, same question.
With the air styles?
Or you mean just what's giving me the hardest time? Yeah.
I still really find the Terrans that kind of, in my opinion, Flash champions this super, super well, and that is that he goes to mid-map and doesn't really leave mid-map and is really aggressive. A game that's very reminiscent of this is Flash versus Parting on Daybreak from this last Group of Death, actually. And ironically, Parting fucking bosses that up and makes it out alive and wins that game. Spoiler, I guess, if you're a week behind. But I think that style is really hard because the speed medevacs allow for Terrans to, like, on the fly really punish positional imbalance is the wrong word, but like being out of position as a Protoss player or capitalizing on a favorable fight. Like if they take out a couple of Stalkers and there's no more anti-air, then they just pick up their whole army and leave, and your Zealots are chasing forever and you have to warp in more Stalkers, but then you have like three or four Stalkers against two or three medevacs worth of units, and then they can die as well. So just really aggressive central Terrans that just, they're never at home and are out in the middle of the map, that always gives me the hardest time. But I feel like that's Terran playing at their best too, so I think it's not necessarily a strategy, but more it should be Terrans optimizing their play.
So I can assume that with medevac boost, that just sort of makes that threat even more.
Yeah. They right. do it much, it's just much better.
Yep. And faster. All right. Let's take some phone calls.
Let's do it.
Let's take some phone calls. If you're new to the show, open up the phone line. Anything you'd like to discuss related to the game, what's going on? And all that good stuff. You can telephone us at 909-581-8519. Try Skype. Can't always guarantee Skype will work, but you can give it a shot. So as we get to the point, coming up this weekend, actually, I have no idea what we have got coming up this weekend, if anything. I'd have to actually take a look at the...
WCS continues, I'm sure.
Right,
that's
right.
The nice part about WCS. You have constant, pretty good content.
Yeah.
And it's somehow, like, not to knock IPL, well, I guess it's kind of a knock to them, but it feels much more exciting than back when IPL had Fight Club and whatever every day. WCS just seems like a bigger thing, because it is a bigger thing.
Yeah.
WCS Group H and AM Group G still coming up into the weekend. We have challenge qualifiers again, which... You know, honestly, if you know, depending on who's in it, there's still some potential for some decent games there. Again, just kind of depending on talent and what they choose to cover. But let's go ahead and take our first caller. Actually, let me make sure that people will be able to hear each other. And let's take this. We got area code 253. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. Or not. All right, got our first fail caller of the evening. We'll take this one then. We've got area code 832. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey, Joey. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's up?
My question regards the difference in culture between Koreans and foreigners. We saw the Group of Death being made in around a 16 GSL last week. Do you think that foreigners would have done something similar given the situation? Additionally, do you think the culture of competition in Korea is important for the dominance?
Good question, first of all. I would say part of how I'd answer this is it's kind of interesting because there is a difference. I've asked a lot of Koreans why they drop so many like manor mules on each other and dance all the time, because in our culture, like, that's a real sign of like, I don't like you, or I'm really trying to rub this in. Like, we take it pretty seriously, but there, from what I understand, they almost unanimously, the answer I get is they do it for the fans. They want to show more excitement and interest and intrigue, and then the Korean netizens love to hop online and be like, do you think MC really doesn't like so-and-so? And then they start analyzing it. Like, it creates this own little drama, but the players themselves actually really don't care at all. If one guy gets manor muled, he'll hop out of that booth and go high-five the other guy because he's his friend. Like, he doesn't care. Whereas if someone were to manor mule me, like, I'm plotting an elaborate scheme to have them fall downstairs and die, and, and you know, I'll get away with the perfect murder type of thing. So I answer it that way because I take that and I have to say, like, the group of death, I feel like a big part of that was those guys, again, putting on a show for the audience, saying people will love this. And I can't imagine that the forerunning thing was them being like, this is what I'm going to do for my best shot at winning this tournament, because it's absolutely not, right? If I'm a really good player, I have no problem facing much worse players all the way to the finals where I win $40,000 or $50,000. Like, I'm totally cool with that. To put that at risk is, I believe, them putting on a show.
Part of it comes down to person to person. Like, there's foreigners who will do the same thing. They're like, I don't really care. Give me whoever. Stefano is, to an extent, like that. Not whole hog, but definitely like that to an extent. So a lot of it's personal. There is a cultural aspect to it. But there can also be like a kind of a selfish thing to that, because it is a double elimination group. You can lose to someone and still make it through. So if, right. For instance, Innovation was super comfortable against Life and Flash, but he doesn't like TVP and he wants Parting out, so he doesn't play him in the single elim portion of the tournament, then maybe he picks him. I don't know what the order of the picks is. This is all just theoretical. But maybe he then picks Parting into a group with two strong players who he still feels comfortable against, and then that gives a good chance to knock out Parting. And so then later on in the tournament, when he would have to get around Parting in order to win it, that situation doesn't come up. So it can be selfish or competitive as well. I don't know. No one really knows except the players what their motivation was for those picks.
I think I remember Parting picked Life, right?
Yeah.
Had like a grudge from him from even the group before, where he's saying something like, you know how Parting is. He says big words, but he was kind of calling out Life, like, his skill is at my feet and stuff like that. And
those two are teammates. They just troll each other constantly.
I think that's what's going on, yeah.
You know, additionally, because we've talked about it here on Inside the Game before, just the whole concept of, you know, a lot of times, in some cases, we've said that Koreans have lacked some personality, and that's been one of the reasons why they haven't been able to sort of catch or stick as much as, you know, look at someone like MC, who does show personality. So it is kind of their way of showboating without ultimately uncovering still that personality. That is their personality coming from within the game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting question. Caller, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take care. Take another one here. Area code 253. I think this is the guy that called in the first time. Let's see what he can do second time up to bat. Hello, sir. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hi. I was just wondering what you guys would think thought about tournaments having the streamer's perspective. And like watching a stream from the perspective of the players.
It's been first done person. Before.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been Doesn't done before. It? I think MLG part of the it? Reason... Yeah. Someone did. Anyways,
those P. I thought like
MLG had the side screens with both the views.
But I mean, I thought at one point they did a tournament where you could POV watch. Maybe
they did during the arenas. That was part of their broadcast package because you had to pay for it.
But I think part of the reason why they did that is because they were able to then run that through their player, so they weren't losing out and being able to keep the analytics of that. Which you don't lose analytics per se if you run through Twitch or something like that. You don't at all. But it's much better for a league to have, I think, one or two streams that shows 120,000 as opposed to people split between streams. But then you're also victim to, like, the individual streamer's stuff. So, like, if a stream crashes, then that reflects poorly on the tournament that's putting on this thing. But really it's just the player at his home in that area. The internet went out or something like that. Or not the internet went out, because then, of course, we got bigger concerns. But things like that. It's just easier and safer to keep it more concise, and it looks better when their one stream has 120,000 as opposed to, and it's not like the player would suck 60,000 from there. You're not going to see that, but even if they took 5,000 or 6,000 away from that number, that's enough that the league might look at it and say, I'd rather we didn't do that.
You know, go ahead, Greg, and I'll give my thoughts.
I was going to say, it's also, I don't think it's the best for viewership. Like, hardcore fans or just esports fans may appreciate it, but if you're there for a more casual viewing experience, watching the first person, or if you accidentally get on the first person, that's like you're introducing esports, that just looks really sloppy and messy and hard to read and whatnot. And I don't think it really adds that much. Having it as, not, as an option is great, but is it good enough to actually justify going through all the work to put it on and have all that? I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, and Greg actually, his last point leads into sort of my segue, and that is I do envision a future where this becomes a lot easier to do. You know, if you think about it right now, how do we stream someone's POV? Well, you got to capture it, and another computer has to stream it, and then it has to be configured and set up. And, you know, I do envision, and it's kind of already here, like the technology exists, but you know, eventually we're going to have a box like this big. It's going to be this big. And, well, this is an Apple TV, but, like, imagine it's not an Apple TV and that this is – we're just going to plug – the computer into this, and this thing will stream away. You know, like, I imagine I imagine a time where we can use stuff like this in a capacity that makes it really easy to just hook up to two stations. It doesn't interfere with the player at all, and it gives the ability to just stream whatever that, you know, that first-person perspective is. I think that what Greg says is that it's just a pain in the ass right now. That's one of the biggest reasons why we're not seeing it.
Also, back to what Greg said about how it's not really open to the casuals. I think it would be because casuals want to see like how they can improve on their gameplay, and maybe they favor watching Zerg. So wouldn't it be cool maybe to have like a lot some other Zerg pros also with on the same stream, kind of commentating on just the Zerg stream? Because when you watch a race, when you watch a tournament, don't you favor one race kind of because that's the race you play?
This is more and more being invested into a side stream that's not going to get nearly as much viewership as the mainstream. And also, I was not really talking about casual on that level. I meant like casual introduction to StarCraft kind of thing. Like, they don't care about getting better. They care about being entertained. And watching that kind of, like, a player's screen moves very quickly. It's a little bit harder to read. It's not set up for a viewing experience. So it's going to have zero value to them. So, like, people who are trying to learn would value it and would appreciate it. And people definitely did like it when MLG ran it as an additional option. Just like DJ Waite said, like, is it worth it yet? And especially if you start adding in casters and all the additional infrastructure behind that, it's just tournaments have obviously decided it's not worth it at this point because they did run it in the past and then they took it away.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much for your call, man. Take care.
Thank you. Bye.
Yeah, I would say it comes down to value overall. You know. Okay. Let's take another call. We've got River on the line. Hello, River. Welcome to Inside the Game.
I don't think you would get me. Let me just mute the stream real quick. Let me turn you up on Skype as well.
Sure.
You know?
Yes, hello?
Yeah, what's up? So, you guys were talking about balance in TVP, and I just wanted to... So, low GMMMR on Europe, and what I'm seeing right now in the TVP scene is that Terran has one opener they can do, and that's it. We have to go Reaper, interact to Marine, direct to all the Aldens that Protoss have, because Reaper is so essential to get scouting information. And I feel that it's going to be more of a stale matchup because if they add the acceleration, it's going to be really, really tough to deal with, and we're just going to be caught in this position where we have to rush Engineering Bay and rush a lot of early defense to deflect a lot of different all-ins. And I don't really think that TVP is going to run into the stale matchup.
A diverse early game isn't necessarily a good thing, because a lot of time it leads to like really silly luck-based games. If you are forced into an opening, but that opening is good, there's nothing inherently wrong with that, especially if it can transition into diverse, interesting play.
It's also a little bit, I would say, sensationalist to say that you only can open up Reaper Expand, because I don't think that that's been playing out. Innovation just last night actually went Command Center first against Rain in Pro League. Innovation would go on to lose that game, but it's not because of the openings. There was no Oracle all-in that followed that. So, I mean, I hear you when you say that with the Oracle buff coming in, that'll make that all-in that much more scary. But I don't know that Terran's only answer to the Oracle all-in is to open up Reaper Expand. I think it's certainly a good answer, but I think good old-fashioned SDB activity. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I think you maybe got me a bit wrong. I was talking about the different, there's so many different all-ins that the Protoss can do. And it requires a lot of different reactions from Terran. So, for example, the Wings of Liberty style, where we go for Gasless Expand into 3 racks, is not really viable because we have to react to the different all-ins in different ways. For example, if we see a Blink Stalker, then we have to get the tanks out or react to Widow Mines. or...
So you're basically saying that right now, as Terran, the only way you can get scouting information in order to find all these all-ins is by using a Reaper and opening in that
fashion. It's the most effective way.
It's the most effective way.
I'm actually really glad you called, because I'm about to save you something like 35 headaches. Now, in 1998, Blizzard created Terran, and they gave them the power of the Comsat. In 2010, Terran was given the power of the Mule, and a lot of Terrans forgot about the power of the Comsat. But on this day, my good friend, I would like to remind you that if a Terran player is ever complaining about scouting...
No, but
I'm going to blow my head off, because you have the best scouting in the entire game. There's nothing you can do to stop it. Literally, if you're worried about all-ins and your Marine or SCV's out on the map and you're like, it's unusually silent out here, I'm worried about a Colossus all-in, boom, you scan, and if you see the Robo, you know it's coming. Or you're like, oh my god, what if DTs are happening? Well, you open up that early eBay, you drop the 75-mineral missile turret, and then you're good there too, right?
Yeah, you might be right. I might be a little bit too whiny about that.
It's okay. I appreciate that.
Are you scanning?
Just scan more, my friend.
Yeah, but I just feel like I fall behind so much because the chrono workers, and I feel that I'm dumping that extra mule could give me so much more to actually defend
it's
all
a
in
drug.
It comes.
I hear you. I hear what you're saying, but guess what?
Like, man,
you're like, let's go. One more mule, baby. One more. And you're like, oh, that's like five more Marines now. But... You can drop, like, I'm not saying scan and don't mule. I'm just saying if in a situation where you're smelling cheese and you're getting denied info, drop that scan. It's better than dying, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Have you tried, just out of curiosity, caller, like, what have you tried to, to basically get the same scouting information but not open in this way?
Okay, so I've been watching a lot of the Muslim and Beyond play, because those are kind of my favorite players right now. So I see Beyond, also Draken, he opens this early Hellion play, which is also really, really cool, I feel. And then you have the Widowmines after that to defend anything that comes. And you have the Gaseous Expanded he does. The problem with that is that the control level of Beyond and the Muslim compared to me is pretty huge, and I feel that I cannot control my Marines as well as he can. So.
Right.
And that's why they made Mech, man.
Well, I'm like, no, Mech is in this
position.
I'm teasing.
That was a hyperbole comment.
Well,
having the control of the tip-top pros is something everybody wants. Not everybody has, for obvious reasons, but you definitely got to work towards it, you know? Just keep practicing.
And remember,
that's the scan sound.
That's the sound of the scan.
Does it actually make that sound?
It goes, I can't.
It's pretty good. It's pretty good.
If anyone else thinks they could call in and give me a better scan sound, I'm welcome. Yeah.
The problem with my question was that was the initial question I wanted to ask is because I stream as well, right? And the problem I have is because I saw this new thing on Twitch is the fact that they require 400 regular viewers to get a partnership. And that's really crucial.
Ah, shit, son. You got traps.
What?
You
know what? Here's the beauty of this. I don't handle any of that. I can't even make that happen.
It's too good, isn't it?
I relinquished my power for that. So you're going to have to go to help.twitch.tv or twitch.tv/p/partners.
No, but I just... Yeah, okay, fine. That's fine.
But good luck.
Thank you, though. It was a good call-in. Appreciate it.
Thank you, dude. Yeah. He did. Come on, you guys. Oh, hold on. Let me just shut the show down for a second. I can't. That shit, you guys. Area code 404. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up?
Hey guys, what's up?
Not much.
What's up, man?
All right. Well, thanks for answering my question.
Cool beans.
You know what? I like that guy.
Yeah, at least it was positive.
It was a good question. It was a good question. You know how long that guy was trying to call in for?
You know what, though? As far as prank phone calls go, I prefer that style to the hey, guys.
He had an objective.
You're all idiots! And then they, like, hang up and they laugh. And we're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm like, I like that guy. He was like, he knew what he was going to do. He probably didn't even have to write it down. Guys, what's up? Not much. Thanks for answering my question. Peace, I'm out. Dude, that guy, that's a good dude right there.
Now, if you call asking if our fridge is running for refrigerator, then
we might have some problems.
Too much.
We got area code 916 on the line. Hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Hey guys, how's it going?
It's going good.
Good, man.
So I was just wondering, Idra, how confident are you going into your group tomorrow? And then how hard do you think you'll beat Ghost of User if you have to play him?
Not super confident. I'd say Polt's the favorite. I still think CVT is pretty hard, and he's obviously quite good. And then amongst the three Zergs, anything could happen. I'd say Revival's a slight favorite of the three of us to get second in the group. So, I don't know. Could pass, could not. Tough group.
Caller, as a viewer of WCSNA, is this a group that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, definitely. I've definitely enjoyed WCSNA. It's been a pretty good show, especially tonight's matches. But specifically, I'm always looking out for Idra games, so I was just curious about that.
Right on.
Well, thank you, man.
It's tomorrow, right? You play tomorrow?
Yeah, right. Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The replays will be broadcast tomorrow, I think. It's already been played.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Was right. Did I miss something? I get a 4.
Yes, played your match, Greg. You did great. You won 4-0.
Yeah, for a second, Greg's like, wait a second.
Replays will be fantastic.
That was a good troll there. All right, thanks a lot for your call, man.
Thanks, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you, dude.
I think that actually threw Greg off for like half a second.
Somewhere there's like a red phone going off in a New York office, like, and they're like, all hands on deck. It's just witness cues that we cast from replays.
All right, I'm not sure what area code 916 is, but it just so happens the last guy, this guy is also calling from the same place.
Do they know each other?
They could be neighbors. Also, area code 916, hello, welcome to Inside the Game.
Oh, hi, I didn't think I'd get through.
Are you neighbors with the guy that just called in?
No, but the 916 is Sacramento, so maybe he's from Sacramento as well.
There you go. There's a lot of people there, though.
Yeah. Could be living underneath you.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Very polite callers. I'm sorry, am I interrupting you blathering while I call in? All right, go ahead.
My question's, I'm a Terran player, but my question's for Idra. My brother is a Zerg, and he's terrible. And he's looking for what, and I want to start transitioning into Zerg, and he's looking for, as well as I, like, what can I do to just learn the Zerg? Because it is so different from Terran. I have no idea. Like, I'm a Masters Terran. I've made it to High Masters, but I have no idea what I'm doing with Zerg.
That's a very, like, open-ended, generic question. Generally, when there's that many things that you don't know and that you're uncomfortable with, you kind of just have to play until things start to fall into place. Make sure you have a good framework. Like, make sure you have an intelligent hotkey set up that you're going to be comfortable with, even at high levels of play, when you have to manage lots of units and like do things efficiently and all that. So don't just start willy-nilly or like try and copy your Terran hotkeys over and like make them work. So plan that out. Watch professional players so you know what you're aiming for. Everything works a million times better if you have a goal or a plan going into a game. And obviously you have to be fluid within that. You have to adapt to things you see. So you can't just do the thing that you decided you were going to do. But if you have goals and you have a general game plan for an undisturbed game, or if your opponent follows like the normal metagame template, and then you know what you want to do, that makes it much easier, because then you don't have to think about what you're going to do. You just think about doing it, and that makes things flow better. But really, if the race itself feels uncomfortable to you, that's just because you don't have any experience with it and your hands aren't used to moving it that way. And nothing's going to really fix that except practice.
Okay. No, that sounds great. Thank you.
Do you like mules, caller? Do you like mules?
Because we got bad news for you. Zerg doesn't have mules.
No, so but you got to inject like a motherfucker.
I don't know. I think Zerg have their advantages, but I don't want to get into that. So.
Yeah, well, I mean, just throwing it out there, but like, play the AI. Like, it's there. It's a lot smarter than it was in Wings of Liberty. At least it will, like, sometimes rush you, sometimes eco-build you, sometimes, like, isn't the hardest part the fact that you want to just, you know, hit 5 all the time? Like, you just, I feel like the best way to transition, right, is to just get those games in under your belt where it doesn't matter if you win or lose.
No, I agree. It's just like, for me, it's like with Terran and Protoss, the builds are very linear. Like, you know, 13, 12 barracks, 13 gas. Like, there's a very linear transition, where Zerg, it's very complicated with, at least for me, with, do I drone now? how much of this the larva system is the real complicated, like it's a very intelligent, you know, thing you have to be able to do, in my opinion. Because with Terran, you could just go five AAA, but with Zerg, you're like, do I build drones? Do I build, you know, lings? And, you know, if you fuck up, then that's it. Whereas, you know, Protoss and Terran are all just, you're always building attack units, so you're always going to have them. You're not going to, you know.
Do all Terrans have this high level of respect for the Zerg race and its mechanics?
Zerg is the busy race in StarCraft 2. Like, creep spread, injecting, that's the mechanical demand. Like, Chrono Boost and mules, or not even mules, but just energy for Terran, they have more forgiveness to it. Like, if I miss a Chrono Boost, I'm not fucking, you know, dead, and I can then have two Chrono Boosts to be used somewhere else. Whereas if you miss injects, yeah, you have heal, and you can drop more tumors, I guess, but you'll overall fall behind.
And honestly, at higher level plays, Terran and Protoss have that trade-off to make, too, obviously. Like, you see it in Terran super early game, you can decide if you're going to do two-base pressure, if you're going to put down two more barracks and do, like, bio, medevac, mine push off of two-base, or if you're going to, instead of making those units, you put down a third CC. That's the same thing. It's just much more pronounced and noticeable with Zerg because it's a direct trade-off in where the larvae go. But really, that comes with experience. Like, you'll find there are cues. Like, the most concrete that comes to mind is back during the Roach All-In phase of CVP and Hot, or in Wings. It was just, you get to 70 supply, then you stop drones, and then you make roaches. And there are those kind of things that are less concrete, but you find those times. You see when Protoss is adding gateways, and you know how many drones you can make, and then you cut it off, and then you start making pure units. So, like, it comes with experience. It's not always this weird nebulous feeling of, does he make any units, is he not? Because every race has timings. It's just a matter of learning those timings, and then learning what your response timing has to be.
No, I agree with that. Now, I do want to say one thing before I go, if that's okay. It's any time you play a different race, you think every other race is overpowered. So for anyone out there getting frustrated, if you just switch to another race, you'll think your old race is overpowered. So anyway, that's it.
Thank you for your call, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Bye.
There's actually a timer on that, because for the first little bit, you're going to do all the stuff that really pisses you off, and as long as you're playing people who aren't better than you, you're going to beat them, and then it's just going to like reinforce, and you'll laugh about how
easy
it is.
You're actually right.
But then you'll start
actually
playing the race, and you'll realize there's problems.
There's a lot of truth to that. That's it. And you know what, Idris, like, you've cracked my head open, because that's exactly, when I play other races, I just aim to do the shit that I hate.
I would two-gate if I was a douchebag Protoss player right now.
Fucking eight Hellions in your goddamn mineral line, you son of a bitch. See if you fucking like it.
If you are one of them.
Then it doesn't work, and that's my fear, is when they like, mumble to themselves, get like, quieter, like, wow. If I would have played the race for 2 years, it would have worked.
Yeah.
There's actually something productive to that, though. If you ever want to figure out how to abuse in a matchup, watch the other race play your race and see what they do. That's what pisses them off the most. So if you want to play in an annoying way, do that.
There you go. Yeah. I like that plan. All right. Is it possible we have another caller from 916?
Is that possible? Sacramento in the house.
I know. They hung up. No, they decided not. Okay. We got area code 760 then. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Hello?
Hello.
Hello. Hey, thanks for having me on. One reason everyone might be from 916 is because of Google Talk goes through that area code.
Oh, maybe that is it. Maybe that is.
Damn.
Look at that.
You're really smart.
I pretend to be sometimes.
You know what? If he didn't call in, this guy would be in chat like, "Hey, dickhead! Maybe it's because it's going through Google Talk, you fucking idiot. You ever think about that?" But, you know, he gets on the phone. He's like, totally reasonable guy. No, I'm just kidding. What's up, man?
So my question is mostly for Idra about swarm host play. I read a guide on Team Liquid talking about using swarm hosts, mostly ZVP. Starting off, two-base play, because swarm hosts are so different from other Zerg units. I've had a lot of success with it, using it in the Zerg versus Protoss matchup. Just wondering your thoughts on swarm hosts, and because I don't really see you use them too much when you play.
I'm not sure about two-base openings with them, but just as part of a mid-game macro, not like macro game, they're very, very good in the mid-game. If your opponent doesn't have some Colossus, you're just going to fucking destroy them. Like, against someone like Grubby, who does a lot of the 2.5 base all-ins, he really likes his Immortal Stalker Sentry and whatnot. I think they're very good because they'll just absolutely shut down that kind of play. and any kind of big game engagements, they're going to be efficient, as long as you have the right support units with them. My problem with them is transitioning into the late game. I just feel they kind of become... I don't feel like they're a very good answer to the heavy air plus Templar kind of style, and that's what really scares me with a late game. Against everything else, I feel you can deal with it. Like, if Protoss isn't doing that, you might as well just go Broodlord, Corruptor, and Fester, and you beat them anyway. And I don't think Swarm Hosts really add too much to that situation. But within the mid-game, they're certainly very good. My problem with it is that's not where Zerg is struggling. It's the late game. And there are options. Like, I actually saw the Roro vs. Flying game last night on Akhlon, the second series, where he just plays super, super, super turtle, like mass spores and spines, and keeps making Swarm Hosts throughout the game just with a lot of Corruptors and Vipers, and keeps pulling Flying units into the static defense. And, I mean, it worked. He won the game. It looks horrific to play, but there might be something to it in terms of just, like, how strong it is. And maybe
there's something to it.
Yeah, well, let me ask you. If you play this style and you're like, God damn, like, it's what I need to be playing. But it is, to horrific. Your effect, like, horrific. Like, it sucks. It's just not, I mean, at that point, are you like, I'm playing to win. I'm gonna deal with it. But
It's probably the same as Broodlord and Fester was for some, not all, but a lot of Zergs. You generally kind of don't do it on ladder unless you don't have a soul. But then when it comes to Terma games, you sit there and you build 100 spine crawlers and you never attack.
It's not a nice thing to say about Russian Zergs, Greg.
Fucking Bly is the devil or something. Like, there is no humanity in it. I like Slivko better, though. So
okay, so you just, we don't say mean things. I get it.
But no, I imagine it would be a similar kind of situation. I'm not going to sit there on ladder and play an hour-long game where I never leave half map. I'm just not going to do that every game. It's not worth it. But in tournaments, yeah, you do what it takes to win.
Now, the caller did say the question was mostly for Greg, so...
For your intro, how have you seen many Swarm Hosts play, and how do you kind of deal with that, I guess?
Yes. So here's my take on Swarm Hosts. I think I agree with everything Greg said. I think in particular the mid-game use of Swarm Hosts is super strong, but I want to give a little bit of analysis on it. I think they're very map-dependent. I think on a map like Daybreak, where you park them at that middle fourth, and they're both defending three pathways, but also threatening the potential fourth of the Protoss as well, just by repetition of the units coming out and slowly grinding things down, that's when they're actually disgustingly good, is when they control space that way. But when it's on a larger map like a Whirlwind, and you can go around those Swarm Hosts or expand away from them quite easily, I feel like the Swarm Host becomes much, much, much more difficult to use. I still think it's not like you make Swarm Hosts and the Protoss like laughs into their sleeve, or they're like, the idiot made Swarm Hosts. I don't think it's like that, but they're just not as powerful, and they're harder on your mechanics. But I'm running into some compositions that you described that are very similar to that, like, just never attack style. And on certain maps, I feel like you either show up with, like, 30 Tempests and 10 Templar, or you die. And it's obviously not quite that severe, but it's very difficult. It comes down to how good of a job you can do at warp prisming their bases, or zealot countering, DT harass, that kind of stuff, and kind of getting them to move around, and then magically showing up at their swarm hosts with detection and just stomping them, because they don't have much health. They die quite quickly. So it comes down to mobility for me, and that's why I want to give emphasis to the map, because I think the map obviously has a big say in how mobile things are.
All right. Caller?
Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye. And like clockwork, he knows when to call in. It's about time. We could probably take one more. I don't know. Look at all these.
I liked it better when he sat there waiting for a half hour. Made us feel more volume.
All right, one more. All right. Area code 916. Hello. Welcome to Inside the Game.
Yes. This is a very general question.
Are you from Sacramento?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, he actually is.
Yes. Sorry, we've had a lot of Sacramento callers tonight. It's you guys are StarCraft fans. What's up?
I've hit a plateau. What do? I mean, I just hit a flat. I mean, I'm losing to bullshit. I enter a game and I'm already upset. Like, what do you do to move past a certain level and just not like? I broke my mouse the other day swinging against my desk, so I need help.
What
I would not do the mouse swinging part.
What,
of things.
What league are you, if you don't mind?
Masters.
What do you guys think? This is, you know, I mean, it's. I think a lot harder to explain to a bronze how to fix their plateauing than maybe a master's.
You can take a little bit of time away from the game and you come back to it with a different approach. It depends on how much self-control you have. If you're, like, not at all into self-control, it's probably best to just force yourself to take a couple of weeks off the game and come back to it with a fresh perspective. If you really enjoy the game or want to keep playing and don't want to do that, you might want to play another race for a couple of weeks or just force yourself to do absurd, weird strategies. Just anything to change it up because you're stagnating and you need to do different things in order to fix it.
Yeah, what I would contribute to that is a lot of times when I hear about people like being really frustrated with the game and stagnating or something like that, oftentimes what I hear them say is like, yeah, I mean, I play like 2 or 3 hours a day. I hit Masters a month ago and I'm still not Grandmaster. I can't believe what's going on. And I hear very unrealistic expectations. Like, Masters is the, you know, top X percentile of players. Like, it's a very respectable ladder rank. And if you're not putting in a lot of time, it's not guaranteed at that point in time that you're going to get much higher. In fact, you could even drop based on what Greg was saying, where you get really frustrated and start playing beneath yourself. Or you stagnate because you feel like what has risen you up to that point should carry you on beyond that. But what actually needs to happen is now you're supposed to be studying pro gamers. You're supposed to be working on mechanics that maybe at this point in time are bottlenecks for you, whereas up until this point they weren't a big issue because you were playing against Diamond and Platinum and Gold players. So that's when you start to like reinvent yourself as a player. But I got to say, like, if I ever hear about a guy who is smashing mice, you know, or like strangling puppies and just getting really mad, then those are the kind of people I look at and I say, maybe, like, maybe you do yourself a favor and find a game you enjoy more too.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I have to actually, in defense of your mice smashing. Like, I mean, I don't claim to really have broken any hardware recently, but I definitely get worked up over my losses. So, I mean, I can appreciate you getting upset. I mean, to me, that says that you actually do genuinely want to improve. I don't think there's any real answer here other than kind of what Idra said. I think that taking a step away is often good. But I would just kind of ask you, what do you think is the one thing that's holding you back? Like, you mentioned the fact that people were doing weird shit to you. Does that mean your scouting is not that great? Or I'm just wondering what you've evaluated of your own play.
Well, two things on the frustration part. First would be there's a big cheese phase right now going on the ladder, at least that I've experienced. Like, everyone's one-basing all-inning or doing stupid shit. And, you know, after, like, the, you know, 7th four-gate or, you know, the, you know, 10th, you know, drone rush, I actually got drone rushed twice in Masters, and I was like, what the fuck is, you know, what is this? And I didn't lose to one of them, but I lost the other one because I went command center first, and it was just shocking. But anyway, there's that, and I do have a problem, like, understanding transitions in the game, kind of, I guess, or, like, I guess I get frustrated, like, if you look away from, you know, it's one of those things, you look away from your army for, like, a second, and it evaporates, you're like, oh, well, fuck, there went my, you know, 50 food lead or something like that, but it's more of the, I scouted something, and I know you guys talked about earlier the combat skin, you know, but if the Protoss puts the DT, the Dark Shrine, like, off in a corner of the map, and you scan, you go, oh, I see 3 gates and no DT shrine. I'm forget this missile turret, and then all of a sudden, you know, 2 DTs, you know, wreck your entire economy. That's just
general issues. Okay.
Yeah, just general stuff. But yeah, it's like, you know, it's like hard to figure out a good, like, it seems like the pros, you guys have your transitions very tight. You know where the game is going, and I guess that's probably where I'm lacking right now.
All right. Well, we wish you luck. Maybe you'll call back in a couple weeks and give us an update.
Good luck, man.
Sure, absolutely. Thanks for the advice, guys.
Thanks. Take care. Bye. All right. Let's do the GOAT list here. Ladies and gentlemen, round of things off for Inside of the Game, episode 69. We got GOAT list. What's up, buddy?
Yeah, not much, mate. Guess what? Oh. Not only is it fucking episode 69, yeah. But today
you?
Marks.
What's her name?
What? Today marks what?
Today marks 2 fucking years of Inside the Game because you guys began on the 3rd of May 2011. So give yourselves
a second. Fucking insane.
That didn't happen again.
That is true. That I think
no,
that's true.
Is it? He did this to us last time, and yeah, I felt like
because
it was
you know
a year
what?
Ago.
No, May 1st, 2011 May 1st, 2011 is when One More Game started. That was
get
the first.
The fuck out. He did this to us at the one-year anniversary. You realize that? And I remember that conversation.
Yeah.
Of course. Yeah, mate.
We've been doing this for 2 years?
That seems absurd.
Someone's got to keep track of it.
That's not right.
Yeah, I'm trying to find the thread now.
It is.
I don't believe that.
It's right. It is.
I suppose DJ Wheat would know.
We've been
inside the game for 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you consider all the events, like we, you know, there had been weeks we had off, because with 52 weeks, it'd be like, you should be at 100 episodes by now, you lazy fucks. But, you know, considering all the travel and everything, that's about right.
Yeah, the thread was started on May 4th, 2011.
Look at
Holy
that.
Crap.
Look at that. Well, thank you, sir, for reminding us.
Huh. He did it to us. Three. I'm going to get you, though. I'll say it before.
My wife had to remind me that my birthday is on Sunday. And Goatless had to remind us that, hey, guys, by the way, 2-year anniversary. Congratulations. So that is pretty awesome. So what's up?
Man,
what's
no
your, you have a 2-year anniversary question? In the 2 years, what's the stupidest fucking thing you've ever heard on this show? No. What's
oh, God, there's too much competition.
nah. Sorry. No themed question. But, yeah, this is a question I feel like DJ Wheat could have some decent insight in on because, you know, he's a bit involved with the League of Legends side of things. He dabbles a bit, but, you know, seeing as this North American only competition's been a bit of a talking point lately, I think it'd be valuable.
Oh, look at that. At least. Put on his Teemo hat.
Sorry, you were saying?
To at least, you know, take a look at what League of Legends has done and try and think, you know, why has the North American scene sort of developed to have more value there? Even though, you know, you ask someone and they'll go, you know, these North American guys are shit compared to Koreans or, you know, even the Europeans, but people still watch those tournaments in droves. And I'm wondering if you think, you know, this is because of the way the scene developed with...
It absolutely.
You know.
I absolutely do believe. I mean, like, so let's make the comparison, right? In Brood War, the scene was kind of dictated by what happened in Korea, right? So from that perspective, the popularity of Brood War and how that kind of spread, I mean, it was globally popular, but really the mecca of StarCraft was in Korea. Well, the exact opposite kind of happened initially with League in that it was the U.S. teams that sort of came up and the U.S. teams that were popular, the solo mids that were like, you know, the first teams to really put themselves out there and be recognized. And, you know, so for that reason, it was a long time before Korea's servers even opened up. And so I do think that there's a lot of, like, team loyalty that already existed there and that a lot of people are now just starting to let that expand to the other regions. Like, I mean, it's hard to say because we come with all the StarCraft legacy and we sort of know that there's a pecking order in the grand scheme of things. And even though we're starting to see a pecking order over on the League side, there's still like a lot of up in the air potential. So, you know, they're like how that scene evolved and where it evolved from is definitely different and has changed a lot for, you know, for in comparison to how StarCraft was and, you know, how it relates to StarCraft 2 and its popularity. You guys have any? I mean, again, Brood War being so popular in Korea, like I'm loving the fact that StarCraft II outside of Korea is probably even growing to be even more popular. But that had a lot to do on the way that the scene came up in North America and how people viewed North American talent.
A lot of it's actually just like the bias that came with the Brood War crowd, because even though the Brood War crowd is a vast, vast minority of the StarCraft II audience. They're the ones who are, like, respected as the elite hardcore. Like, Jeff always loved to bring this up back when the Kessel players came over to MLG. It was, like, people tweeting about standing next to Flash. They have no idea who the fuck Flash was. They just, like to feel cool and like to be a part of that. Yeah. And so everyone hears the Brood War fans talk about what Korea was in StarCraft. And, I mean, they are still the best, so it's easy to, like, perpetuate that. And so there's just this aura created around the Koreans. And then the fact that they are the best, obviously, again, keeps building on that, where there's just so much respect for them that – and then on the other side of that, so much disrespect for the North American scene and to a lesser extent the European scene that it's just – you get this impression that, well, if I want to watch real competition, why the fuck would I watch anyone but the Koreans? And I'm sure with League developing first in NA and not so much in Korea until later on, even if the Koreans are better – they just have that actual difference in skill. They don't also have the aura and the history of being dominant to really bolster their reputation. So I imagine that plays into it a lot.
Yeah. So wait, do you feel like I feel like the League of Legends scene, it has like this cross-continental play a little bit less frequently than the StarCraft thing, because like in StarCraft, you're seeing Koreans versus Americans like every single event, you know.
Yeah, well, you also had, I mean, you know, you had MLG, IPL, NASL, GSL, all of these leagues doing their own thing. So they sort of like set the foundation for, you know, the initial year of StarCraft. I think what happened is with Riot moving on to LCS, they picked up in that process much earlier. So there weren't as many established competitions that was seeing global gameplay as, you know, as we were seeing in StarCraft 2, and that made a, you know, huge difference. So the nice thing for Riot in terms of the LCS is that goes, they didn't necessarily have to deal with the region stuff and going, is a Korean team going to be in North American LCS, because that's the way that the regions were already, you know, established. So because it happened earlier, I think that was very beneficial to LCS. Right.
If you want to be really cynical and give Riot a lot of credit for being evil and intelligent, if you actually separate the leagues early on and you don't see the North Americans competing against the Koreans, then you never really see how much worse the North Americans are. I don't know how big the disparity is in League. But you never see that. And honestly, most fans don't understand the games they're watching well enough to really see that just watching the North Americans play each other. Like, the pros can tell. The pros can tell if you're worse. But is an actual fan just watching two North American teams play each other, are they going to know that that's not the same level of play as amongst the Koreans? A lot of them aren't going to realize it. So separating them actually does the pretty big service to the North American scene.
Yeah,
and I'm sure that wasn't intentional, but it's fun to pretend it was.
Yeah. I think when you have the Koreans going up against the Americans, you know, only, you know, in this one tournament, you know, every 6 months or something like that, it's easier to write off if they lose, or, you know, it's easier for people to not think about how the disparity is much, I think.
Yeah.
You know, instead of StarCraft seeing people, you know, Korean smashing every week.
Yeah. Well, and it also helps out with that sort of underdog story, I think, overall, because if someone does come out, people have preconceived notions on who should win and what the pecking order is, and so that opens up a lot of opportunities as far as that's concerned. But GoatLess, thank you again. Happy 2 year of
thank
calling
you very much,
inside the game.
We yeah, thanks, man.
All right, catch you later, fellas.
Peace, buddy.
See you, dude.
All right, let's do our wrap up. Once again, thanks for tuning into Inside the Game, episode 69. Let's start with Greg.
As always, I'd like to thank Team EG, all our great sponsors, title sponsor Raid Call, and Monster Energy, King Sniper X, Razer, Astro, Sam, Intel Extreme Boards, InWind, Beyond Gaming, Split Reason. We're going to have to lower that list again. That's too many. It sounds silly. But big thank you to all of them. You can follow me on Twitter at Idrigit, IDRAGIT, and watch my stream on twitch.tv/EG_Idra. I'm streaming pretty much every day, and that'll continue, so please join in there. And thank you all for watching.
Greg, were you streaming without sound yesterday?
Yeah, I think I like had speakers plugged in, and so the sound didn't go through or something, and then everyone was being really obnoxious and demanding that I fix it, and they just kind of annoyed me for whatever reason.
Yes,
and I wasn't doing commentary anyway, so I just ignored them.
I was watching, and Jenna's like, what? Is it a sound broken? I'm like, I guarantee you that he was just found out it was broken, and he was just like, fuck it.
When you do that, Greg, you send ripples through the internet. Like, I had people in my stream chat, like, can you tell Greg to turn his sound?
They're real.
So fucking annoying. So every once in a while, I'm just like, I have to piss them off as much as possible.
I think you did a good job.
You're like, can you please tell Greg to unblock me from Twitter and control?
I didn't realize that blocking people on Twitter, like, told them that you blocked them. until I saw a Total Biscuit tweet a while ago. So I do it so much more now because I know that it pisses them off. Like, what? Before I thought it just like prevented you from seeing.
Oh yeah, they can't even see. Like, if they're logged in with their account, they cannot. You like don't exist to them anymore.
They can't follow you if you block them.
They never know what you can unless they make.
But it doesn't realize that. Greg, unless they click on your account, then they can't see any of your tweets and stuff.
Well, I figure these losers are like sad enough to pay a lot of attention to it, so they'll know.
Yeah, they know.
And then you know what happens, Greg?
Then like send them a message like, "You've been blocked.
Can you tell Greg to unblock me from Twitter? All I said was that he was a fucking dick, and then and then he just blocked me. I mean, I don't get it. Anyway. Thank you, Joel.
Same thing. Big shout out to our team, Evil Genius, obviously, and all our awesome sponsors. In the immediate future, actually, I'm 5 minutes late to be doing role play, so if you want to hop over to ItMeJP, we're doing Dungeons & Dragon. It's really fun. If you're new to that, there's been weeks of that stuff documented on YouTube and all that thing, so you can catch up. But I'll be killing wizards and shit. Outside of that, Evil Geniuses-wise, I'm told not to leak anything because I'm a big mouth and I do announcements of announcements and all that shit. And as my final shout-out, I want to go on record with my tinfoil hat theory.
Okay.
In the off chance that this is correct, and then I look like some way awesome Nostradamus type guy, I would like to submit that I think NASL is going to move away from StarCraft II. I think Mr. Bitter will hang back and transform into Kevin Naki, where he'll still work with NASL. And then I think Rotterdam will move on, splitting the duo, and go to New York to work with MLG as a commentator for StarCraft II.
Dun, dun, dun.
I don't have any super insider information, so I could be absolutely wrong. Mr. Bitter could tweet me right now, call me a jerk-ass, and then say I'm totally wrong.
What's a jerk-ass?
But I do think there's – I think I might be right for, like –
I'll be
you know,
watching
Sherlock
with
Holmes,
breath.
Like streams from one picture to another. I've connected the lines, and if I am right, then I just ask that everyone gives a one-time donation of like $200, and I'll tell you the future some more.
I think it's an interesting theory, aliens, and
the reptilians are
forward
behind
to see
it.
If it's gonna happen.
Forgot about the reptilians.
We've got Live on 3 tomorrow here on OneMoreGame.tv. That'll be at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I think we were going to mention it, but next week we might be trying something new on the show. And we possibly might actually use a feature of Battle.net that we wanted for a long time. We bitched about that it wasn't there, and now that it's there, you know, I guess we should probably use it. But looking through at least a game replay, a replay that's interesting, pertains to maybe any of the current meta as well, and finally utilizing replay for friends to discuss some of the games that are happening in the StarCraft universe. So we realize that like a billion shows are talking about a lot of the current events, and we're one of those. So we're going to try it out and see how it goes. But if you guys have any specific games, I think we're really would like to take a look at. Well, we won't go into that, but you know, send them our way. We'd love to hear from you, and we'll see how this goes. But with that being said, thank you for tuning in to Inside the Game, episode 69, and we'll see you next week for episode 70. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace. All right, I gotta go. I'll see you.